Hello, and welcome to another episode of Ballot to Talk About. This week, we'll be looking back at a series of state elections that have been held in India and asking the big question: is Prime Minister Narendra Modi on track for his historic third consecutive term? It's Sunday, the 10th of December, 2023.
A president who seeks not to divide but unify.
Not now. I am a fighter and not a quitter.
It's time for a change in this country, my friends. A real change.
Let's keep moving.
Slava Ukraini!
And joining me, as always, on the other side of the world is my co-host Sam. Happy December, Sam. Has the soothing tones of Mariah Carey wafting through your flat?
It is indeed. We got the Christmas tree up earlier this week, so feeling very festive here. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, you're definitely a first December kind of person, is it?
Oh yeah.
Can we conclude?
I mean, I'm a Christmas baby, so that's always going to happen.
Well, I have to say that this week I'm still in shock about some of your results of some of the answers you gave to the quiz, particularly the question on which was the first Green Party council that they were in absolute majority control of. So that has been running through my entire this week, and listeners should listen back on that end of last week's quiz, shouldn't they?
Absolutely, but I look forward to finally reaping my revenge next week when we review the entire year. But I am slightly concerned that it'll end up being 3-0, so we'll see.
Well, we'll find out next week, and that's all for next week's episode. But for this week's episode, there basically been a whole series of state elections in India, most of which were the results we knew were known in the last week or so. But for listeners' benefit, we did do a podcast, I believe, in February that looked at the state elections then on Tripura, Meghalaya and Nagaland, in basically elections in the northeast of India, in an earlier podcast episode. But in this episode, we'll be taking a look at the rest of the state elections that took place this year. Largely around central to southern India was where a lot of the electoral action took place, Sam. So let's kick off. Sam, why don't you bring us, the listeners, through what some of the... We're going to be talking about two big themes, and we're going to start with a series of BJP triumphs, aren't we, Sam?
Yeah, so since we last spoke about India in February, there's been six state elections take place. Those have been in Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, Rajasthan, Karnataka, Telangana, and Mizoram. So we're going to be splitting them into two. We're going to be sort of parking Mizoram because it's slightly different. But we'll be talking first about Chhattisgarh, Madhya Pradesh and Rajasthan, which were all big BJP victories in the last few months. And then we'll talk about Karnataka and Telangana, which are Congress success stories. So we'll be splitting them into two. And there is a geographical split going on, Chern, which I think is where we're going to start, which is that the BJP seem to be continuing their dominance in the north of India. And I'll just quickly run you through those results. So in Madhya Pradesh, the incumbent BJP government had a significant increase on their seat shares. They went to 163 seats, which is an increase of 54 and an increase of 7.5% of the vote, to have nearly 50% of the overall vote share. Congress lost 48 seats down to 66 and ended up on just 40.5% of the vote, but only a loss of 0.4% there. Then in Chhattisgarh, the BJP increased their seats again significantly by 39 to 54, with 46.3% of the vote, an increase by just over 13%. And the incumbent Congress party lost nearly half of their seats, down to 34 from 67, and they lost just 0.8% of the votes, down to 42.2%. And then in Rajasthan, again, BJP significantly increased their seat count by 42 seats up to 115 and 41.7% of the vote, which was up nearly 4%. And the Congress, which was the incumbent government, lost 31 seats down to 69 and actually marginally increased their vote share to 39.5%, but still well below the BJP, who will be going on to form government. So, Chern, a raft of pretty successful results for the BJP. Initial reactions to it, and if you were to give an answer, which do you think is the most encouraging for the BJP of that set?
Well, I think it's helpful to state the context. All three of them, I should say as well, Madhya Pradesh, Chhattisgarh, and Rajasthan, if you go back to the last time these elections were held in 2018, they were all Congress victories. And in particular, the framing around it then was that Narendra Modi was in deep trouble because he lost Chhattisgarh and Rajasthan. In particular, Chhattisgarh was lost not by a small margin, it was a landslide loss by the BJP. But in 2019, what was the impact of that? Narendra Modi was handsomely re-elected with an increased majority. So I think a lot of the coverage that I saw was particularly framed of what does this mean for the Lok Sabha elections next year? And I think what we can conclude is that I don't think, if we look back at history 5 years ago, there's not necessarily a strong disconnect between what happened at the state elections held this year and the Lok Sabha elections that will be held next year as well. So I think that's important to say. But nonetheless, I think these results are particularly significant as well. You asked the latter question about which one I react to was most surprised by. I was less surprised by Rajasthan, because when I did a bit of research, Sam, the role of the Rajasthan chief minister has rotated between the BJP and Congress every 5 years since 1993, similar to what we see in Himachal Pradesh. So I think this rotational aspect of government, I think, can sort of be expected, really. So then we looked at, then I think if I'm of the two, Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh, which is probably the most damaging from Congress's perspective. So to answer this question, I look back at the political history of the parties in the Chhattisgarh, in both Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh. So in Madhya Pradesh, if we were to take a look at the chief ministership, I can tell you that actually the Congress victory in 2018 was seen as a blip rather than the norm, because this has been a BJP state since 2003. And similarly in Chhattisgarh as well, the Congress victory in 2018 was also a blip as well, because even throughout, again, similar to both states where the BJP had governed it since 2003. So I would say that, you know, if we peel beneath the headlines of this quite impressive victory, both of which I think there are reasons why Congress should not be as demoralized as possible. But nonetheless, I think of the two, by numbers, Madhya Pradesh is probably the bigger disappointment. What do you think of their opening series set of remarks, Sam?
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. And I think it is worth saying that Rajasthan, as you said, alternates, and then Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh have both been historically pretty strong states for the BJP. Madhya Pradesh, I thought, was particularly interesting because the incumbent government here was the BJP, but the incumbent winning party of an election was Congress. So there was sort of a bit of a dichotomy going on. And one of the only reasons why the BJP ended up back in government was that 22 Congress MLAs defected back in March 2020, bringing down Kamal Nath's brief stint as chief minister. So I think Madhya Pradesh was a slightly odd situation going into this election. Whereas Chhattisgarh, BJP, as you said, have been in power since 2003 to 2018, and this Congress term did seem like a bit of an outlier, but I think they'll be particularly disappointed because, Chern, did you see the opinion polls and the exit poll in Chhattisgarh? Because the results of the exit poll were remarkably inaccurate and suggested that Congress were actually going to defend Chhattisgarh, and then as the results came in, they quickly realised that the BJP had actually almost wiped them out. So I think they'd have been particularly disappointed on the night with what happened in Chhattisgarh, because I think they had high hopes of trying to defend that.
I should say Indian exit polls are notoriously unreliable. This is not the first time that the exit... It's not like the British exit poll, which has turned out to be remarkably accurate. Indian ones I've not been. So to be honest, I didn't really look at the exit poll results or take much faith in the Indian exit polls given this track record. But I should say as well, the reason why is that in India, at a federal level, there is actually an anti-defection law that if a person defects from one party to another midterm, they automatically lose their seats and there are by-elections. You won't be surprised to learn that that law doesn't exist at state level, because this is not the only state where you're seeing a midterm switching government.
I think if that law did exist on state level, I think we'd be having Indian state by-elections almost on a weekly basis.
Indeed. So that was probably the opening of whether we are surprised by this series of elections. I'm keen, Sam, what has prompted this shift back to the BJP in these three states?
From what I could tell, there was a number of different reasons across the three different states. There were slightly different reasons. I think one of the prevailing reasons, if you did want to catch all, which is a similar story to quite a few of the state elections we've talked about in the last few years, is that in the north of India, particularly in the Hindu-dominated areas of India, Modi as a figure is extraordinarily popular, and him and Amit Shah play quite a large role in a lot of state election campaigns. And that's no different than the three states we've talked about already on this podcast, because Modi had quite a number of rallies across these three states, and Amit Shah was coming up with policy provisions in some of these states. And in fact, I've got a stat churn from Madhya Pradesh just to talk about how nationalized some of these campaigns were, is that of the MLA candidates fielded, there were seven incumbent Lok Sabha MPs, there were three federal union ministers, so members of Modi's government on the national level, and a national party figure as well. So you've got Narendra Singh Tomar, the agriculture minister, Prahlad Patel, the effective water minister, and Fagan Singh Kulaste, who actually did lose. But those are three members of Modi's national government choosing to be candidates. So that's how nationalised some of these state campaigns have become. And I think that's one of the reasons why the BJP were able to do well, because whether the state leader was popular or not, the real figurehead of these campaigns was Narendra Modi, who continues to have a pretty high approval rating in this part of India. So that's reason one. Before I say my other, do you want to respond to that one?
No, I think that is large. The nationalization is a very important point. And I think you have to ask, why did he want to nationalize the elections? Because his brand is one of the most popular world leaders in India. I see an opinion polls conducted where he has over to 60 to 70 approval rating as well. And I think as well, he probably looked at the last election set of elections when these states came up to the polls in 2018. And he remembered the narrative of my government's in trouble. But you know, the fact and that shaped the narrative and gave Congress hope in going into the 2019 campaign. I think this time around, he did not want to give the opposition alliance that kind of hope. Yes, he's polling very well now, but I will say going for a third term, the government is 5 years older than it did in 2019 when it's only seeking its second term as well. And I just didn't think that he didn't want to give the opposition parties any chance that or any potential momentum that they could build out of this elections. I should say as well that if he's a student of history, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be, I should note that the last time in which the BJP held national office with Atal Bhadri Vajpayee, they fell short going for a third term in 2004 and lost to Sonia Gandhi, who is the mother or Rahul Gandhi, in a surprise election victory. So if he looked at what the risks or the downside of it, I think he just thought that, you know what, I cannot take anything to chance. I cannot rely on these local leaders. I have to use my own national campaign to ensure all three state parties get over the line. Yeah.
I mean, there's another good illustration from Rajasthan as well about the power of personalities, because the Congress chief minister at the time, so Ashok Gehlot, this was his third stint as chief minister since 1998. So every time since 1993 that the power has alternated, Ashok Gehlot has been the chief minister on the Congress side. So a well-known personality in Rajasthan, you would expect pretty popular with Congress voters. However, in this election, 6% of Congress voters said that Ashok Gehlot was the main motivation behind that. 17% of BJP voters said that Modi was the reason behind their vote. So in the battle of personalities that Ashok Gehlot tried to set up, and he made no secret of trying to make this quite a presidentialized campaign, he was still outflanked by Narendra Modi, who wasn't even on the ballot in this election. So that's the power of Modi's personality. And I think you can't really look away from that as a reason. And also in Madhya Pradesh, they were not shying away from trying to go after the Hindu vote as well, because one of their key policies being championed in that election was about the fact that they were successfully able to complete the Ram Temple and conveniently timed the opening of the Ram Temple to early 2024 to try and maximise the potential vote impact of that in autumn 2023 elections. So you can see this thread running through these three elections of the power of Modi as a figure and the BJP's national brand as well. It's not all national by any means. I mean, Chhattisgarh, there was anti-incumbency was pretty rife against the Congress candidate. I mean, the Chief Minister Bhupesh Baghel was facing pretty remarkable corruption charges and allegations that he was receiving payoffs from a betting app. He also, 22 of their MLAs were removed from the list, citing anti-incumbency, which conveniently didn't include any of Bhupesh Baghel's ministers. All 13 of them were put up for election, but 8 of them lost their seats. So you can see the level of anti-incumbency against that government in particular. So it's not all national, but I think there is a strong national undertone, even if you do start to look at the state level stories.
I will say this though, Sam. I mean, if we were to compare, the exception is Madhya Pradesh, where you have to look at the last election because of the changing government midterms. But incumbent governments have not had a good success rate, isn't it, this year, in the latter half of this year? Because even the ones that the Congress gained, then we will talk about that in a minute, they were gains from other parties, not necessarily gains, not necessarily holes. So I wonder if. Is that potentially just a general anti-incumbency mood that Modi has to be careful of?
I think certainly on the state level, there seems to be a strong element of that. I was doing a bit of reading this week, Churn, about how it's quite common in Indian state elections that the party on the state level removes candidacy from a lot of their MLAs because of anti-incumbency. So actually, one of the things talked about was that in Rajasthan, only 17 Congress MLAs were denied candidacy, which they were describing as remarkably low. So I think it's pretty common that parties would remove candidacy from incumbent MLAs because of the strength of anti-incumbency against them. So I don't think it's unusual for anti-incumbency to be a pretty strong thread of Indian state elections. And rather than just allowing it to happen, the parties go, nope, you're not standing anymore, and remove them completely, which is very different to what happens in the UK, for example, where you would have to decide yourself or be deselected. I thought that was interesting.
Well, it didn't help Congress what so bit, despite the fact trying to get some kind of incumbency factor in Rajasthan, is it? The voters who threw them out. So I continued this trend as well. The one thing that I read is that Modi has been very successful at increasing the BJP's appeal, particularly amongst lower caste voters, which didn't necessarily vote for the BJP until he took power. Part of it is this Hinduism appeal. Hindu is the majority religion in India. And he not only combined religion, but for some reason, the nature of his personality meant that a lot of the welfare programs that the federal government had instituted, he could associate them himself with these welfare programs in a way that not many other Indian prime ministers could. So you had the religious aspect, but you also had the economic welfare aspect. And Indian elections are often characterized by this competitive welfareism between the two parties. And I wonder if as well, because he was able to so wrap himself within it, that he was able to maintain his approval ratings, but drag the BJP across the line in many of these places as well. So I think that's something to note as well.
Yeah, and especially those kind of things work in states like Rajasthan, which have higher than average unemployment rates. Their unemployment rate in the last figure was 4.7%, but with youth unemployment, it was 13% compared to the national average of 12%. So it's when you have competing welfare programs and those unemployment statistics, I think you can quickly build an argument as to why the BJP were able to do so well here.
Well, if we talk about the BJP doing well, then nonetheless, there's enough within these results to suggest that they need to be careful and they still need to work hard over the next 5 months as we head up to a Lok Sabha elections as well. Because in particular, southern India, the story is a little bit different. And in southern India, we're going to talk about Mizoram in a minute because I think that's an interesting story by itself. But the politics, in particular Northeast India, are very different from the rest of India. But in Karnataka, we have a 224 seats up in the Legislative Assembly in May, therefore you need 113 seats. The Indian National Congress has roared back into government. They have 135 seats, up 55, with 43% of the vote, up 5%. The BJP has 66 seats, down 38, with 36% of the vote, virtually no change. And Janata Dal, secular, which has been a nominal ally of Congress in the past, has got 19 seats, down 18, with 13% of the vote. And in next door Telangana state, which is a newly formed state, for listeners' benefit, it's a state that's only 10 years old. It's split off from Andhra Pradesh in 2014. And in the 119-seat Legislative Assembly, Congress and the Communist Party allies will be forming government for the first time in this part in the state's history. It's got 65 seats, up 45, with 39.4% of the vote, which is up 11%. The regional party BRS has only got 39 seats, down 49, with 37.4% of the vote, and down 10%. The BJP has won 8 seats, up 7, with 14% of the vote, so nearly double their seat share. And there's been others have won 7 seats. So, and I should say that in Telangana, Karnataka, Rajasthan, Chhattisgarh, and Madhya Pradesh, there have been some others in independents represented in these legislatures, but they primarily represent tribal interests. So these are tribal seats more than anything else. So Sam, we talk amidst all of this, it can be argued that the Congress Party has been in disarray. So what is different in southern India that has enabled Congress to put up a much better showing in the rest of India? Because one thing that I thought of was that I tried to look at the composition of Hindus in these states, because I thought that the issue of religion could be potentially less of a factor here. But I was surprised to learn that Karnataka, we're still looking at 80% Hindu population. So what is different in southern India compared to northern India?
I think one thing that does seem to be different, and particularly in these two states you talked about just now, is that they're quite wealthy states and they are quite tech and financial hubs of India lying within them. So within Telangana, there is Hyderabad. Within Karnataka, you have Bengaluru, which is like India's equivalent of Silicon Valley, sitting in these two states. So the sort of conversations you're having in the election campaigns is less about just throwing cash at the election, but is then trying to talk about the sort of where jobs lie in those states. We talked about the high unemployment in Rajasthan. It's a very different employment composition in Karnataka and Telangana, where there's a lot more financial services jobs or big tech jobs, compared to what you have in the northern parts of India, where just talking generally about the divide between agricultural employment and city-based employment is a huge motivator because a huge proportion of the jobs available in those northern states are in agriculture and in more rural-based jobs. So they're just very different. I mean, India is a highly populous country, as we know. It's the most populous country in the world. It's also a large geographic country, and it's also a highly developing country. So the divide across the country in terms of what people do, how voters behave, and what they need from their government is very different. And I think that divide is pretty stark between Telangana and Karnataka, and then your Rajasthan, Madhya Pradesh, and Chhattisgarh. So do you think that's a fair assessment, Chern? I think that's one of the main reasons why these results are so different.
I was going to say, I think you've hit the nail absolutely on the head there, because I have some statistics on where the Indian states rank in terms of their economic, in terms of GDP per capita. So India's GDP per capita in 2021-22 was about 1,955. I can tell you that Telangana and Karnataka were respectively the fifth and sixth most richest state in India, with nearly double the GDP per capita of in India nationally. So this is absolutely income driven. And then what about the other three states that we looked at? Well, they're all below the national average. Rajasthan was, just repeating that. So Indian wide is 1,955. Rajasthan was 1,790. Madhya Pradesh was 1,601. And Chhattisgarh is 1,589. So they're all three of them in the all three states that the BJP won were in states that were relatively poorer than the median than the country. And the two states in which the BJP, well, one in which the BJP is turfed out, the other in which they were not really a factor in the conversation, they were talking about the top five richest states in top 10 richest states in India. So economically, they're very different. And therefore, it means, would you not agree, Sam, that this economic welfare argument would not necessarily play well in a richer state? It is less of a factor for these states. And secondly, I do think that in these states, which are also much more highly educated than some of the other states as well, being the home of Hyderabad, for example, the issue of religion and really using that religious divide just generally doesn't play well. Look at how Donald Trump appeared really tanked in the suburbs. That's a good comparison, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I don't think the economic argument is like the be all and end all in these states, but I think a bit like the Modi factor in the north, I think it's one of the things that sort of underlines everything if you want to try and nationalize these races. But I want to talk about Telangana first, Chen, because I think it's more interesting because the state's very young, as you said, and since its conception 10 years ago, they've had regionalist parties in control of the Congress, in control of the state government. The Bharat Rashtra Samithi party have been in control, and they were absolutely obliterated in this election, frankly. And I just thought that was quite interesting. And when I read more into it, it seemed that what the Congress party was able to do was try and associate the BRS with the BJP and create a situation where it felt like your regionalist opposition vote was for Congress rather than the BRS. And I saw that Congress threw a heck of a lot of money at this election as well. They were promising cash transfers, pension scheme expansion and reform, free electricity, free land, focusing on women, farmers, students. They're already, one of their big promises has already come into action, even though they've been in government for only a few weeks, which is to provide free bus travel for women across the state. And actually that started on Friday. So that's actually just come into action. But you see how the Congress party really were trying to make some inroads here, and it seemed to work quite successfully against a pretty successful regionalist party for the last 10 years.
You and I must have read the exact same article, because I had the same exact list of policies that the Congress party had. So we must be both reading the same article. Sam and I don't correspond or put links out. We have our own personal notes, but that's almost word for word what I was going to say
and
as well.
I think what's unfortunate for the BRS in this election is that they were not just fighting Congress, they were also fighting the BJP as well. So they were caught in the middle of a war between Narendra Modi and Rahul Gandhi. And I think they were unable to defend themselves on two fronts. And that's how the Congress party were able to sort of come through the middle.
No, and I think as well, some other factors that I read as well was that, and I don't think this can be underestimated as well, was that the chief minister, the former chief minister, K. Kanadri-Rio, was accused of having seemed to have put a foothold in Telangana, he was suddenly trying to expand his party's efforts or initiatives in other states, particularly Maharashtra. And I don't think, particularly in the cost of living crisis and the general mood of anti-incumbency, being seen to take your eye off the ball and not focusing on your state and trying to expand your party's your foothold in other states, I don't think would play well as well. So I think that's something that cannot be underestimated in this election, particularly for a regionalist party where your whole identity is focusing on the state. This trying to imply that you're moving away from that, isn't it?
It will be interesting to see, actually, particularly in this state, what happens next year, because the BRS have also been historically successful in the Lok Sabha elections within Telangana. So it will be interesting to see, even though they've lost the state, do they still have a foothold in the Lok Sabha nationalized wing of things? That will be interesting, I think.
I think you're absolutely right as well. And I should also note that it's interesting that I think part of the Congress's base was always been minority voters as well. And they instituted a minority declaration where they're providing assistance to Muslim Christian Sikhs and other minorities upon completion of master's or PhD programs. I think in particularly a more educated state, that sort of policy, A, the BJP was less able to use that Hindu divide to try and capitalize on that and try and make an electoral asset about it as well. But B, as well, you're also stitching together what was previously successful about Congress, activating those kind of voters. Those were the type of voters they used to routinely do well and win in national level. So there is still remnants, particularly in Telangana, and we should not argue in Karnataka of that old Congress coalition, why was is seen as the grand old party to win, isn't it?
Yeah, let's talk about Karnataka because it's slightly different to Telangana in that just after the 2018 election, the Congress were actually still in power under their Chief Minister Siddaramaiah, and it was only about a year after the 2018 election that it all unraveled and the Congress and Janata Dal coalition collapsed, and the BJP ended up back in government there. And it seems that whatever was going on for the last few years, the BJP have been ousted from power quite spectacularly here. And I noticed that the Janata Dal party also lost half of their seats. So I wonder if they were the party who were punished the most for the collapse of that Congress government. And you see a lot of that pouring back into Congress. But that's certainly one aspect of that churn. But what I did want to ask you about whether you think this was at all a motivation for what happened a few weeks ago in Karnataka. Is that it's been a pretty turbulent political history, it's fair to say, for the Karnataka State Legislative Assembly, because in the last term, they've had four different stints of chief ministers, and in the previous BJP run term, there were three. So across these last few terms of BJP control, the chief minister role has been fluctuating so much. And I wonder if the political instability of that is potentially one of the motivations why Congress were returned this time.
It's not just the instability at the top. You also had allegation of corruption amongst the ministers as well. So you not only had it's just a whole attitude of poor governance. And I think it does show that Modi does have his limits of appeal. If there's the right demographics, the right education level, despite the fact he held 19 rallies and roadshows in the final weeks, and the BJP held 9,000 rallies in total. Clearly, frustration over rising inflation, a lack of job creation, particularly outside the capital, Bengaluru. And combined with the poor governance, forcing its party leaders to focus more on the achievements of the federal government rather than the state government, that was just too many, it was just too uphill a climb for the state BJP to overcome. And I think the differences as well is that Karnataka's election was in May. Really isolated from the series of state elections we held in February, and these big set of state elections that took place now, that very much was in the national conscience. And people looked upon these state of the later elections like Madhya Pradesh and Chhattisgarh as reading the national mood ahead of this election. There was much more attention placed on it. I wonder, Karnataka, do you agree with me, Sam, that because it was the only election at that period of time, that people were more able to focus on the local BJP and the local Congress. And if you have four chief ministers, if you have corruption allegations, if you have frustrations over the governance records, it's not a good track record to be running for a second term, is it?
No, I think you're absolutely right, is that there was a lot of attention placed on this state, both locally and nationally. I mean, I think one of the reasons why the media and we have paid a lot of attention to Karnataka is for both wings, this was pretty high stakes because for the BJP, this was the last stronghold they had in the south. And for the Congress Party, it would have been a pretty big scalp and useful scalp for them going into the Lok Sabha elections next year because Congress had had a pretty torrid time this term in terms of state elections, and winning back Karnataka, I think, would have been a really important one for them. So despite the fact that Modi, as you said, did that many rallies in the last few days, I think Congress equally were putting a lot of political energy into this state. And I think that's one of the reasons that they were able to win and capitalize on the failures of the governance there.
You want to talk about tactics as well. Obviously, in India, we know caste plays a big role as well. But I did read that in Karnataka, which is dominated by a caste called the Lingayat caste, is traditionally seen as a strong part of the BJP base. Well, after the BJP withdrew support from several old guard leaders who were not given tickets to run, the Lingayat caste was basically withdrew its support, basically. So I think that some of these old, if you want to talk about, and therefore where withdrawing support, it did not turn out to vote, or some of it just voted for the Congress, and we've seen the impact of that. That despite its best efforts, and there were some attempts in the local BJP over its last term to use the same tactics of what worked in Northern India and Southern India. So for example, the BJP supporters and leaders banned girls in Karnataka from wearing headscarves as part of a school uniform, okay, targeting the minority Muslim population. I just think given the richer demographics of the state and the fact the withdrawal support from a key voter base in its Hindu coalition, it failed.
So Chen, we've talked quite a lot now about the BJP successes in the north, the Congress successes in the south, and the fact we have a Lok Sabha election around the corner next year. Do you think anything that's gone on in the last 6 months of state elections in India has changed the narrative going into the Lok Sabha election? Or are, as we discussed at the start of this year, we still pretty much almost certainly now expecting Narendra Modi's BJP or the NDA alliance to win this election?
I think it's fair to say that Narendra Modi is still favourite to win his a historic third consecutive term. I should note that none of the previous titans of Indian politics, Indira Gandhi, for example, although she won three elections, they were non-consecutive elections as well. So this will be heading towards a historic, particularly in modern Indian politics, what Narendra Modi is attempting to do. But nonetheless, I think the only thing that he has to be careful of is that I think one of the strong factors running through these states is anti-incumbency factors. I think that's in play for many of the state governments in Karnataka, the ones that the BJP lost, and the ones that they gained as well. I think there was a strong anti-incumbency mood. And we've covered many podcasts, and it's no stranger why there's a strong anti-incumbency mood throughout India. Rising cost of living, high unemployment, lack of economic opportunity, just to name a few. So I think that could be his only risk of in his attempts to try and win the third term. I will say this though, in terms of India's most populous state, so I'm thinking of the Uttar Pradesh of the world, if we looked at where the Congress party, where the BJP could do even better, that's the most populous state, it's home to 20% of Indians, it's also one of the poorest states as well. And we've seen potentially an income divide across these states as well. So Narendra Modi, I think it's fair to say, is to summarize, it's in a good position to win a third term, but he should be wary of A, the potential anti-incumbency move, and B, how the narrative in 2018 really did not tell the story of 2019. So there's still a lot of work to be done to secure his third term, but he's definitely on track. Do you agree with my analysis, Sam?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, we've talked earlier about how opinion polls and exit polls in India tend to be less than accurate, but we have now had a pretty consistent national polling lead for the BJP, and in every seat projection in the last few months, the Congress, yes, are looking much better positioned than they were 5 years ago, but are well short of a majority in returning to government, well away from the kind of seat projections that the BJP and the NDA are recording. So I think that's important. I think anti-incumbency is a risk for Modi. But what I will say is, unlike the Congress party, for the state elections across the board for the last few years, Modi and the BJP have almost been running a national campaign already successfully. So all they're going to do next year is repeat that kind of campaign across all the states at once. And you've not exactly seen an anti-incumbency fervor in areas that the BJP did well in 2019 in those state elections, where Modi has been a key figure, as has the national government, as has Amit Shah, as has their national agenda. So are we really expecting anything to change next year when they run that campaign again? Because they've just had a pretty successful nationalized Modi-driven campaign in Rajasthan, Chhattisgarh and Madhya Pradesh, three states. They had it last year as well across some of the most populous states in India. So I'm not seeing a huge amount of evidence yet that Modi as a figure will suffer the same anti-incumbency that some of these chief ministers are suffering. Do you think that's fair?
I think it's very fair as well. And the other thing that I think is worrying from any opposition attempts is that they've formed this incredibly vast coalition of opposition parties, and they literally call themselves the India Coalition. I think it's like the Indian National Development and Inclusion Alliance or something along those lines. Initial spell out India. But the arrangement of communists to center-right dissidents, and it's kind of like, you know, we talked about...
And it's not a pretty happy family either, because the AAP and the Samajwadi Party are pretty angry at Congress for dominating that coalition and for not being doing particularly well with it.
And more importantly, I don't think Congress can quite move on from the Nehru-Gandhi family, because what was interesting and striking to me is that in both Telangana and Karnataka was that its state leaders are still willing to defer and to allow Rahul Gandhi and increasingly his sister Priyanka Gandhi to take a lot of the credit for their successors. But yet its local leaders in Madhya Pradesh, in Chhattisgarh, have failed on, are unwilling to say, well, it's all the Gandhi's fault. So it's likely to be a Modi versus a Gandhi of some kind. And we've seen the impact of Narendra Modi going against Rahul Gandhi twice. And if he tries a third time, I don't see anything, why it would be anything different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think that's one of the underlying stories of the last few state elections and going into the Lok Sabha, is that the BJP is Modi's party. It is centered around Narendra Modi. It is fully backing Narendra Modi to be the prime minister after the next Lok Sabha election, and lets him as a candidate come to pretty much all of the state election rallies as well. Because in some countries, you see state parties, I mean, Australia is a classic example for the Liberal National Coalition, almost begging the national leader not to come to campaign because they won't have a positive impact on the election. That is certainly not the case for the BJP in India and most of these states. But it is the case for the Congress Party, who are, and the India Alliance, because they are bitterly divided over what they stand for, who their figureheads are, whether that works in particular states, how they should run a Congress campaign here versus how they should run it here. You've just got two wildly different coalitions at play in India, Chern. And I think one of the old adages of politics is that divided parties can't win elections. And the Congress Party, I think, is going into this Lok Sabha election pretty divided, or not necessarily divided, but uncertain on what it stands for and what it should look like. And I'd really love to ask some of the National Congress figures whether they genuinely believe that they can win this election, because I think with the way some have been acting, I'm not sure they would answer yes to that question.
I don't think so. I don't think Rahul Gandhi is the figure. I think his sister's a bit more charismatic than him, but I think the days of that the family needs to do something more than just churn out somebody else, I think. Something doesn't seem to be working as well. I will say this one point as well. I know we didn't talk about Mazaram, but I think it's interesting to me is that I went to look back at the history of Mazaram, is that what has happened in Mazaram is that the Mizo National Front is part of the Northeast Democratic Alliance, which has been allied to the BJP government in India. They were kicked out as well on a myriad of issues. The age of the outgoing chief minister at 79 was seen as a factor against him. the state of healthcare was to be a big problem, allegations of corruption.
He's but a spring chicken compared to Joe Biden.
I was going to say, you know, the fact that he said the age was in fact against him at 79, I was like, there are several world leaders going past that, but let's ignore that. But I think what's key, interesting from in Mizoram here that I want to point out and its implications nationally was that the winner of the election was not the Congress Party. The winner of this election was the Zoram People's Movement, who were barely a fringe party 5 years ago. And 10 years ago, they were not even a party. So I think it's interesting that the mood for incumbency is there, but it may not necessarily even benefit the Congress Party itself. Because they, you know, in 2013, they won the state elections here. 10 years later, they have one seat. And in an anti-incumbency election. So that is the risk for a Congress Party. And Mizoram...
and less seats than the BJP, who have been a non-entity in this state in the last few years.
Exactly. So that is what I find interesting about this, is that and Mizoram is a slightly different state. It's whilst income is close to its national mean, only 2% of its population is Hindu. So I think it's a very different state in terms of its religious makeup. But I think it is interesting that Congress was not seen as the option here. Another party, an upstart party was. That being said, the Zoram People's Movement, its new chief minister is quite a colourful figure. He was one of the first few MPs kicked out by the anti-defection law in the 1980s and was a former bodyguard to Indira Gandhi. So he has some Congress-adjacent blood. He ran for the Congress in the 80s. But it's still interesting to me that voters, while still angry, did not even vote for the Congress Party. And that is a big, big problem for Congress, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen it in other states as well that we've talked about in the last few years where the AAP have been a recipient of anti-incumbency factors. So it's not a situation where Congress is the automatic beneficiary of anti-BJP sentiment. So that is interesting. Chen, my final question was going to be about, do these states matter in the Lok Sabha election? So the states we've talked about today, how significant are they? I mean, Karnataka is a potentially big dent because the BJP in the Lok Sabha election 4 years ago won 25 of the 28 seats there. So for Congress, it would be significant taking control of the majority of Lok Sabha seats in Karnataka. But with the other ones, where do these sit in terms of what we'll be talking about in April?
Well, I don't think Mizoram, sadly for Mizoram, only has one seat playing a particularly big role in the national election. So apologies to Mizoram for to the people of Mizoram. I don't think you're going to have to see a lot of campaigning in your part of the world. Which of the five states, which is the most important? Well, I think in Telangana, if the demise of the regional party is true, that could open up gains for both the BJP and Congress Party, because in 2019, the TRS has 9 out of the 17 seats, the BJP has 4, and the Congress has 3. So Congress's opportunity to expand its foothold, as does the BJP, has a chance to mitigate any potential loss in Karnataka, which is 28 seats, and the BJP has 25 of them. So there's potential for quite a lot of losses in Karnataka, let's be honest. And the Congress Party had a disastrous elections in 2019. They lost 8 seats there. So I think they potentially will lose seats in Karnataka if we look at 2019 election results. But in Telangana, there is a possibility of gaining seats. So Chhattisgarh has 11 seats. The BJP only has 9. So I think it's largely, if they hold on 9, I think that'll be a very good result for them. Madhya Pradesh have 28 seats there. So again, you know, they need to try and hold as many of these seats across this area as well. And finally, the final state is Rajasthan. They hold 24 of them. So frankly, these are states in which 24 out of 25, the BJP already hold the lion's share of that. So the fact they've held state government, I suspect in the next 6 government, the state government is trying to do all it can to try and help the National Party win another term.
So we've not had much evidence that the BJP fortunes are going to change in these states in 5 months' time. But Chern, interestingly, when Modi came to power in 2014, in 2013, the year before, the Congress had won the election in Karnataka. 6 months later, the BJP won 17 of the 28 seats available there. So they weren't even able to convert their state win in Karnataka into a Lox Harbour win there as well. So if you are Congress, I'm not sure you've got pretty good writing on the wall from these five states across the board, even though they're pretty happy with their Telangana and Karnataka results.
And like I said, the last time the BJP tried to win a third consecutive election in 2004, we saw Sonia Gandhi win them. So who knows what might happen, isn't it? As you know, we keep saying a week is a long time in politics. So what's 5 months, eh, Sam?
Yeah, I mean, the election in India is nearly 6 weeks long in itself. So those 6 weeks are a long time in politics.
And we will definitely be covering and much more as we wrap up what is an interesting last set of election results we are going to cover on this podcast in 2023. And on that note, that is it for the latest episode of Ballot Talk About. We will be back in for one more episode when we'll be reviewing the year that was 2023 in politics and concluding with both the annual Ballot Talk About Awards and our year in review quiz. And as always, we'll continue to keep you up to date on our Twitter page on the world of politics and elections from around the world. You can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at @ballot_tour. For also there, you can also find a thread for the full list of results on Indian state or the six Indian states we talked about. So do leave us a rating or review or simply tell your friends about us. You can also email any feedback or comments about it to talk about at gmail.com. My name is Chet Han, and until next time, we will speak to you soon.